Let's go ahead and get started on another week of our 4.5 year journey through all of God's inspired scripture by turning to 2 Samuel chapter number 5, verse 17. Now, when we closed up last session, I told you that David was being gifted by the king of Tyre with a palace, and that this northern neighbor of his was basically congratulating him on taking Jerusalem as his new capital and becoming a strong king. But not all David's neighbors felt so happy for him. In particular, the Philistines, who live off to the west of Judea and of Benjamin and of Dan. They've got control of the southwest corner of the Promised Land and have had that for the entire period of the Judges, it would seem. Well, when they heard that David had aggressively taken over the city of Jerusalem from Canaanites who had been living there since the time of Joshua, more than likely they began to imagine that it would only be a short period of time before David would come against them and dislodge them from their territory. Because after all, they were living in the Israeli Promised Land as well. So it appears as if the Philistines decide to take preemptive action. Now, it is interesting that David is about 7.5 years into his kingship. So why did they wait so long? Well, I suspect it was a matter of just taking a wait-and-see attitude. For the first couple of years, there was the civil war between David and Ishbaal. And then there was the civil unrest that followed the assassinations of Abner and of Ishbaal. But the moment David took the city of Jerusalem, that changed the dynamic. Because now he was clearly asserting himself as the king of united Israel. And so that's why I think the Philistines did what was recorded here in 2 Samuel chapter 5, starting at verse 17. The parallel, by the way, is in 1 Chronicles 14, if you'd like to find it. So 2 Samuel 5:17 reports, when the Philistines heard that David had been anointed king over Israel. So, like I said, he's been their king for several years now, but it was the movement to Jerusalem that seems to have triggered them. So all the Philistines went up in to search for David, but David heard of it and went down to the stronghold. Now, the stronghold that's being referenced is at Adullam, about 15 miles south and west of Jerusalem. And the reason why David goes there is twofold. Number one, the Philistines are pushing in against Jerusalem and Bethlehem, and he needs a place where he can carry on operations against this invasion. And secondly, he knows this place well. I mean, this was his area of operation during those years that he was on the run from Saul. So, verse 18. Now the Philistines had come and spread out in the valley of Rephaim. Now that valley stretches from an area down near Adullam, northeastward toward Jerusalem. In fact, it ends at the southwest corner of modern-day Jerusalem. It dumps into the Valley of Hinnom on the south side of the ancient site of Jerusalem. So it is an access route. If you're marching from Philistia through the Valley of Elah and then jumping into the Valley of Rephaim, it'll take you right straight up to Jerusalem. Now, its name is interesting, just as a kind of a side note. It means the Valley of the Giants. It goes back to the time of Joshua and before, probably because there were some giants living in this valley, just like there were giants living around Hebron at that same time. All right. Another thing, though, that you should keep in mind is that not very far east from this Valley of Rephaim is Bethlehem. And so apparently there was a party, a war party of Philistines that kind of split off from the group in the Valley of Rephaim that was heading for Jerusalem. And they went eastward and basically took over Bethlehem. So that seems to have been the plan, is to put pressure on David by controlling his new capital and by controlling his birthplace. There is a secondary story that I'm going to go ahead and bring up now that comes from 1 Chronicles 11, starting at verse 15. So you can keep your place there in 2 Samuel 5. We'll be back there very shortly. But this is a little side story that happens before David attacks the Philistines invading the Valley of Rephaim. 1 Chronicles 11, 15. Three of the 30 chief men. Now, this gets into the organization of David's army. He's got top commanders, and then middle management commanders, and then lower commanders underneath that. So we've got a big group of 30. And three of those guys went down to the rock to David at the cave of Adullam when the army of Philistines was encamped in the Valley of Rephaim. So we know it's happening at the same time as our story in 2 Samuel 5. David was then in the stronghold, and the garrison of the Philistines was then at Bethlehem. So that's how we know a group kind of split off and went over and took over Bethlehem. David said longingly in the hearing of these three guys, "Oh, that someone would give me water to drink from the well of Bethlehem that is by the gate." So this is just an offhand comment. He's kind of bemoaning the fact that his home city has been taken over by part of this invasion force of the Philistines. And he's like, "Wow, what I wouldn't give for a sweet taste of the water of Bethlehem." Well, the three guys that heard it decided to do something about it. Verse 18, "Then the three mighty men broke through the camp of the Philistines and drew water out of the well of Bethlehem that is by the gate and took it and brought it to David." So they fought their way past whatever guard there was, got the water drawn, and then fought their way back out, successfully, I might add, leaving probably some dead and wounded Philistines behind them, and brought this canteen, this skin bag of water back to David. Because that's how devoted they are to their king, to their commander of their army. But David would not drink it. Now, from our mindset in the modern Western era, we would think that that would be terribly insulting because they went to all this trouble, they risked their lives. Why won't David drink the water? That would be honoring to them. But these guys are not Western-minded people. And they are not living in our culture and in our time. David does something that matches their thinking and shows great honor to these men by what he does. So don't think like we think. Think like the Bible people think. This is one of the issues of history we've always got to be careful about. We can't project on history our own concepts and our own prejudices. We've got to let their culture speak through and understand it from their point of view. So David wouldn't drink it. He poured it out to he who is. So he basically dumps the skin canteen out on the ground. Now that's not a waste. What he's doing is he is acting as if he's giving it to God as a sacrifice. This water is too valuable for him to meet his thirst. It is so valuable that only God should have it. And that's who he gives it to, God. And then he said, "Far be it from me, before my God, that I should do this thing. Shall I drink the lifeblood of these men? For at the risk of their lives they brought it." Therefore he would not drink it. These things did the three mighty men. So these guys risked their lives, and David says, well, that's too valuable a water for me. I've got to give it to God. Now, after that event, we then have David taking military action against the invading force of the Philistines. So this is where we go back to 2 Samuel chapter number 5. Verse number 19, David inquired of he who is, "Shall I go up against the Philistines? Will you give them into my hand?" So this is where he asks the high priest to use the Urim and the Thummim to get answers to yes and no questions. Question number one, shall I go up against the Philistines? Well, the Lord said to David, go up. So the answer was yes. Question number two, will you give them into my hand? The answer to that was also yes, because it says in the rest of verse 19, for I will certainly give the Philistines into your hand. So David has now been told, absolutely attack them. So David came to Baal Perazim. That's the name that the site will get because of this battle. We'll explain that in a moment. David came to Baal Perazim, somewhere in the valley of Rephaim, and David defeated them there. So he attacks them and beats them bad. And then he said, he who is has burst through my enemies before me like a bursting flood. And therefore the name of this place is called Baal Perazim, which means the breaking out place of the Lord. Because Baal here is the Canaanite word borrowed to mean the Lord. And we keep seeing that in a lot of name components from this time period. Verse 21, the Philistines left their idols there, and David and his men carried them away. So the Philistines ran away so fast that they left behind not just simply weapons and other equipment, they actually left their idols that they brought along for good luck. Because remember, the Philistines are of this thinking process that the power of your God is centered around the idol that represents him. So if you want the power of your God to be extended, you move the idol around. And so they took their idols with them up the valley of Rephaim, and it didn't work for them. And so they ended up abandoning their gods, and David kept them. Verse 22, the Philistines came up yet again and spread out in the valley of Rephaim. And I think that probably it was only a matter of weeks later that they tried again. And this time, it might have been a recovery operation. to try to get their idols back, as well as dealing with David. Power items are very important to armies. If you think farther ahead in history, we have historical accounts of where the Roman armies were defeated and their eagle standards, that is their military standards that had eagles up on the top of them, those were lost, and later military operations were launched to try to go back in and get those things back because they were so important. So I wonder whether or not that might have been the reason for this secondary operation. So David does the same thing, and he seems to be operating again from the battle field headquarters at Adullam. So David inquired of he who is and said, and so he asked the question, and God gives him this answer through a series of processes. You shall not go up. So don't attack them straight out this time. Go around to their rear, which I think would mean around between them and between them and Jerusalem, and come against them opposite the balsam trees. So somewhere along the route of march, there's this plantation of balsam trees. Then rouse yourself, for then he who is has gone out before you to strike, verse 24, when you hear the sound of marching in the tops of the balsam trees, then rouse yourself, for then he who is has gone before you to strike down the army of the Philistines. So he's given a sign. Go to this area, wait until you hear the sound of armies that are up on the same level as the treetops. And that's when you attack. So it would appear this is one of those times that God sends his angelic army with supernatural signs and manifestations to attack the Philistines first. Then David and his guys join in chasing them the rest of the way out of the country. So verse 25, that's exactly what they did. David did as he who has commanded him and struck down the Philistines from Geba to Gezer. So Geba here is somewhere in close proximity to Jerusalem. And David chases them westward and a little bit northward until they're down near the town of Gezer. And then by that time, probably the night comes and the Philistines have been defeated so soundly that the chase is called off. So two times, I think in less than 3 months, the Philistines invade Israeli territory, trying to come against Jerusalem, coming against Bethlehem. And both times, God uses David to defeat them and chase them out. Which then brings us back to the story of the Ark. As you remember, the Ark of the Covenant was put on hold. The movement of the Ark of the Covenant was put on hold for 3 months. And so that 3 months is now up, and David decides that this time they can do it correctly. Now, we've got information from both Samuel and the Chronicles. I'm going to read to you from the Chronicles because it has the more full account. So 1 Chronicles chapter 15, starting at verse number 1. It says, David built houses for himself in the city of David. So this is where he's beefing up the city of Jerusalem as his capital. Now, he doesn't need a whole bunch of houses for himself personally, but he does need an awful lot of housing for the capital building needs because he's got to have leadership there, military, civilian, religious, they're going to need housing. Any type of foreign nationals coming to Jerusalem, they're going to need a place to stay. People of all levels of society are going to come to Jerusalem for worship. They're going to be needing places to stay. So he's starting to build Jerusalem up as the great city of the United Israeli Kingdom. And then, more specifically, he prepared a place for the Ark of God and pitched a tent for it. So he wants the Ark, the throne of God, to have a special place in the capital city. Now, he doesn't build a temple building for it, even though later that's what he'll want to do, and he'll make plans for it that he'll pass on to his son Solomon. Instead, at this point, he just simply makes a tent structure, probably similar to the tabernacle that the Ark of the Covenant was originally in. And so he pitches that tent probably on his palace grounds so that God's presence will be near his presence. Now, it is thought now that David's palace was in the northern end of the city of David, the original city of Jerusalem. The two trips that I've made to Israel, we had a fantastic visit to the archaeological site of the city of David. And on the north end, there's this palace, this very large building that they are unearthing that is likely to be the site of David's palace. And that means that the Ark of the Covenant was located there at some time as well. And so I'm always excited when we go to that particular area of the city of Jerusalem. All right, so verse number 2. Then David said that no one but the Levites may carry the Ark of God, for he who is has chosen them to carry the Ark of he who is and to minister to him forever. So David and probably the spiritual leaders, the priests and the Levites, they've reassessed the problem from 3 months ago, and they've come to the conclusion correctly that they were the problem. They didn't do things right. And so this time, they're going to do it correctly. And they're going to have the specific group of Levites that are supposed to do so carry the Ark of the Covenant on the carrying poles on their shoulders. And beyond that, they're going to make a really big to-do about it again with lots and lots and lots of people, with lots and lots of music and singing. In fact, there's so many names mentioned here, and I'm going to skip through a lot of them just because they're unfamiliar to most of us, and I'll highlight key ones along the way. So verse 4, David gathered together the sons of Aaron and the Levites of the sons of Kohath, so that would be one of the divisions of the Levites, with Uriel the chief and 120 of his brothers. And then the sons of Merari, that's another of the divisions of the Levites. Shemaiah the chief with 200 of his brothers. And then of the sons of Hebron, Eliel the chief, 80. Sons of Uzziel, Abinadab the chief, 112. So these are different divisions of the Levites. So then David summoned the priests, Zadok and Abiathar. Now, we've already met Abiathar. He is the surviving priest from the slaughter of Doeg the Edomite. He's been with David ever since David was on the run from Saul. And he has a partner now named Zadok that is kind of tag-teaming with him on the high priest duties. And then we've got several Levites named off here that are actually the musical Levites. And so he said to them in verse 12, "You are the heads of the fathers' houses of the Levites. Consecrate yourselves, you and your brothers, so that you may bring the ark of he who is, the God of Israel, to the place that I prepared for it. It's because you did not carry it the first time that he who is our God broke out against us because we did not seek him according to the rule. And that is absolutely correct. And so now they've remedied that and they've basically repented. They've got their minds altered back to the way of God's doing things. So the priests and the Levites consecrated themselves to bring up the ark of he who is the God of Israel. And the Levites carried the ark of God on their shoulders with the poles as Moses commanded according to the word of God. Verse 16, David also commanded the chiefs of the Levites to appoint their brothers as the singers who would play loudly on musical instruments, on harps, lyres, and cymbals to raise sounds of joy. And then we've got a whole bunch of names listed about those that were playing all these different instruments. Then in verse 19, we've got singers, and we've got those that are sounding bronze cymbals, and we've got those that are playing harps in verse 20, and those that are playing lyres in verse 21, and the names of those that are, the name of the guy that's directing everything, the director of the musical procession. He's listed in verse number 22. And then we've got trumpets being blown in verse 23. And then it's interesting, at the end of verse 24, it says Obed-Edom and Jehiah were to be gatekeepers for the ark. So I told you it was possible that Obed-Edom was already a Levite of some sort, and that's why he was put in control of the Ark of the Covenant temporarily. And now it looks as if he's going to be given a special role at Jerusalem to kind of help with the access to the Ark to be kept only to those that were appropriate. So he'll be a gatekeeper. So David now has almost everything in place to make this journey the rest of the way from Kiriath-Jearim to Jerusalem. And it's going to be a great celebration. We don't have the time to finish that description today. So let's mark our place right here. And tomorrow we'll get right back into God's Word.